to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to be discussing an article that can be found at beef.unl.edu titled Considerations for Breeding Season and Confinement for Beef Cows. To have a conversation about this, I'm joined today by the author, Dr. Carla Wilkie, who's a Nebraska Extension Cow-Calf Systems and Stocker Management Specialist. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
For many folks, Dr. Wilkie, this spring, turning cows out to pasture is not going to be an option due to the loss of that pasture either to wildfire or just because of the extremely dry conditions. There's not going to be grazing available. This means for many cow-calf producers, they may be looking at a breeding season with cows in confinement, which is outside of what they're normally used to doing. Share with us some principles, some things to pay attention to for folks who may be dry lotting cows during the breeding season this year, things that can help them have success in doing that.
Yeah, it is kind of a bleak looking year going into the breeding season, but I think there are some things that we can consider that will help make it a better deal. And so if we do have to do the breeding season in confinement, I think one of the first things to think about is that it doesn't have to be in a feedlot. It could be on a fallow ground or a residue field or a pasture trap, something of that nature, just not out in the normal pastures, large areas that we usually use. And we may be feeding them a confinement diet. And if that's the case, then that feeding space needs to be about 2 feet per cow or bull, and then about a foot for the calves that are in there with them. This is especially true if we're trying to use kind of a nutrient dense diet so that we can limit feed them a little bit and not go through so much feed. So feeding space becomes very important so that we don't have boss cows and bulls pushing more timid ones around and those not getting enough feed and then maybe not cycling well because they're short on feed. So that's something to think about. Minimum square footage is usually around 500 square feet per pair is recommended. If you have a little more than that, it's great, but gets kind of tight if we go under that. And then an area for calves where they can loaf and get away from the cow and bull activity of breeding. And that helps kind of reduce pathogen load exposure when they have a little area where they can kind of get away from everybody. This may be some opportunity to provide shade or wind protection for the calves as well. So housing considerations like that can be something to be thinking about if this is something we're going to have to do.
Dr. Wilkie, when you talk about feeding space, it doesn't have to be bunk. It could be something as simple as REA poles as a back and an electric fence or old irrigation pipe as a back with an electric fence. We can get pretty creative here to make this work short term.
Yes. Yeah. Don't have to have bunks. Don't have to have an actual feedlot pen design. You know, even feeding on the ground, there's more waste that, but you don't have to go put something together. So that's an option too. But I do like the idea of maybe having a hot fence that they stick their head under or something where you're reducing the amount that they're trampling and loss, but you certainly don't have to do anything very expensive.
Let's talk a little bit about ration, because as we think about especially March, April calving cows, typically they're going on to grass that's the best quality of the year. And so they're on a pretty good plane of nutrition. We need to be aware of that as we think about feeding and confinement.
Yes. So the lactating cow has a huge energy drain that the just gestating cow, you know, pregnant cow that doesn't have a baby already on her, has a much lower need than that cow that's lactating. That's a huge energy drain due to lactation. And what happens to some producers is they just draw out the diet that they are feeding the cows during gestation when the cows are already going into lactation because they don't have anywhere to go with them for green grass. And they understand that lactation requires more energy. And so maybe they up the feed a little bit, but they don't realize how much lactation increases that need. And so the cow can begin to pull on her own body reserves of fat to mobilize enough energy to meet the lactation needs of that for that calf. And then she begins to draw herself down and she doesn't cycle. And so then I've had people tell me, well, breeding in confinement is just a disaster. And that might be part of what they ran into was just that lack of understanding of how much energy lactation requires. And so, UNL Extension is happy to help people develop those diets with the resources they have, but it's critically important that lush green grass quality is what we're striving for to get in that cow in a diet that we're actually mixing for her. And some of that's true for the bulls as well. They're much bigger in size usually than the cows, and so their maintenance requirement is more. And then younger bulls are also growing. And so again, when they're out on grass, they're maybe able to get that energy need. But if we are the ones that are having to provide it for them, then we have to make sure that the diet that we're mixing and feeding them meets their needs as well. And then the intake of the calf is something to consider, because normally the calf would be grazing grass and getting their feed that's in addition to milk from that, and now it would be on us to provide.
Dr. Wilkie, you hosted a webinar here back in March that really went through a lot of this content in more detail. So I'd really encourage folks who might be listening to this podcast, if you're thinking about doing this and needing some input on what are some ration options, how do you make this works, what are some logistical things to know before you dive into this, would encourage you to go check out that webinar. It's at the Beef Watch YouTube channel. It's a confinement cow feeding webinar that Dr. Wilkie did earlier here in March. As we think about the opportunities that confinement cow breeding provides for us, we can use some technology and perhaps turn this lemon situation into some lemonade with using things like ester synchronization or timed AI or even just some natural service with synchronization to increase the number of cows bred early in the breeding season.
Absolutely. And that can be a positive for people who are now having to move the breeding season in closer to facilities. And so there are obviously some protocols that have to be followed, some shots that have to be given for that. And so it helps when they are close to a facility where you can run them through the chute and give those. But those protocols are very important to follow correctly. And so I would encourage people to look at those over before they get started and make sure they do know what to do in the right order, that kind of thing. But it's certainly something to consider. And then, one of my favorites is bull breeding, but synchronizing those cows and then using natural service. And that's just one shot through the chute 5 days after the bulls have gone in. And so that one's a nice way to get everybody a little tighter. So something to think about.
How do we need to manage these bulls differently in confinement? As we think about bulls in a, dry lot scenario, they're in close proximity to one another. Do we need to think about maybe rotating bulls, doing some things differently than we would if we were kicking cows out on a section pasture?
Right. Again, with the lemonade out of the lemons thing, one thing that does help you is there's not bulls traipsing a huge pasture hoping they run into that cow at the water. I mean, they're tight. They're going to know when the cows are in heat. So that's a positive side of it, is that you're pretty close. But the downside of it is you're pretty close. So, the older bulls who tend to be more dominant during the breeding season are going to be right there. And so the younger bulls aren't going to necessarily be able to take cows off to the, find the cows that are off in the back corner, whatever, off by themselves. So I think you need to be a little more careful in your pairing. I like to put, my older bulls together and then maybe younger bulls, but with one bull that's just a little bit older than them. So maybe two-year-old and two yearlings or something like that in this one group, and older bulls over here. So I know I've got some backup from that two-year-old, but gets everybody a chance to work, and they don't tend to, seems like as bulls get older, the more aggressive and prone to fighting they are. And so I don't want in close confinement my young bulls really putting up with that. So if there is a way to divide those out, it's good. But if you're going to divide them out and they are going to be in close proximity, you have to have really good fences between them too. And I like to get the bull groups together 2 or 3 weeks before actual breeding season, so they can get their pecking order established before they're supposed to be working. And so those are things to think about too. Breeding soundness exams, boy, that's really critical, especially this year, I think.
Dr. Wilkie, any other take homes or things you think folks should be aware of as they look at the possibility of having their breeding season in confinement this year?
You mentioned rotating bulls and that kind of thing. And I think that that might be another option is if you go through part of the breeding season with some older bulls that are pretty aggressive, and then you don't want necessarily those younger bulls in there with them, but you want calves out of them, you know, rotating some out and putting the others in is also maybe a possibility. There's lots of different things that people can do like that. So that's something to think about. I think sometimes people are good about getting a breeding soundness exam on the young bulls they just bought because the bull breeder did it. But on a year like this, when the weather's not been bad, they're tempted to skimp on the older bulls that they already have. And I would argue that between drought and the effects that that's had on nutrition, and if they've been stressed by fire and smoke and things, that's not the year to skimp on that, and make sure that you are not putting a dominant bull who actually wouldn't pass a breeding exam in a small area with a bull who did. So I would encourage you to do that.
Dr. Wilkie, thanks for helping us think through some things to consider as we get ready for this breeding season that may look really different for many folks this year than typical.
Yes, it may. Thank you for having me on.
Well, for more information on the article we did discuss in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find it at beef.unl.edu. I would also mention if you have questions around the content that we discussed in today's podcast, Dr. Wilkie's contact information is available at beef.unl.edu.